Chapter 25. Sergeant Morales found Trout a room in a small hotel near the airport. Trout lay on his bed for hours, staring at the ceiling fan, wondering what Gamay was doing, before he finally slipped into a few fitful hours of sleep. He awoke at twilight and took a shower that was all the more refreshing because there was no hot water. He was pacing the tarmac when the pilot and sergeant arrived as the sky turned peach pink in the east. The chopper followed Chi's map in a straight line at its maximum cruising speed, flying at an altitude of 1,500 feet. The forest stretched out below like a rough-napped green carpet. Arriving at the area indicated on Chi's map, the pilot slowed the aircraft and dropped it almost to treetop level. The Jet Ranger admirably fulfilled the purpose of its original design as an Army observation helicopter. Trout, who was sitting in the front, noticed a textural difference in the greenery and asked the pilot to circle. Morales picked out the barely distinct edges of the rectangular plane. After a couple more passes for the pilot to acquaint himself with the lay of the land, the Jet Ranger landed at rough center. It took Paul less than 30 seconds to decide he didn't like this godforsaken place. Not one damn bit. It went beyond the remoteness and the weird mounds and the darkness of the encroaching forest, even in daylight. Something sinister lurked here. As a boy, he used to feel the same prickly scalp uneasiness when he walked past the deserted house of a sailor who ate his crewmates while becalmed in the Sargasso Sea. Maybe Gamay had never been here, he thought, looking around at the desolate spot. All he had was Dr. Chi's map and the supposition that this was their destination. He could be spinning his wheels while Gamay desperately needed his help elsewhere. No, he clenched his jaw. This was definitely the place. He could feel it in his bones the way his fisherman father sensed a storm brewing. The police officer suggested that they fan out in three directions, keeping each other in view as much as possible, walk to the edge of the woods, then return to the chopper. A half hour later, they straggled back. Morales was about to speak, but paused as his ever-searching policeman's eye picked out evidence of an earlier visit. Squatting for a better look, Morales said, "See where the grass is broken. Here, and here again." He angled his head. "There, when the light is just right, footprints." Thinking he would never want Morales on his trail, Trout followed the sergeant's example and saw the faint shadows that had caught the police officer's attention. The sergeant instructed the pilot to stay with the helicopter and got no argument. The early morning sun was already hinting at the blast furnace it would be in the hours to come. They set out with Morales taking the lead, and had gone only a short distance when they saw a mound that had been cleared so the stone blocks on one side were visible. At the base of the structure was a reddish patch. In his eagerness for a better look, Trout ignored the sergeant's admonishment to stay behind. He dashed past the sergeant to the mound and picked up Gamay's worn maroon L.L. Bean day pack, the same one he had given her as a Christmas gift 2 years before. With mounting excitement, he rummaged inside and found her camera and sketch pads, some plastic lunch bags, empty soda cans, and a bottle of water. Nearby was another pack made of tan canvas. Trout held both packs high over his head for the benefit of Morales, who was walking briskly to catch up. "This pack belongs to my wife," the Numa scientist said triumphantly. "The other has Dr. Chi's name on the tag." Morales inspected the professor's bag. His face was clouded. "This is not good." "What do you mean, not good? This shows they've been here." "You misunderstand, Senor Trout," Morales said with a quick glance around. "I found a campfire where there were signs of many chicleros." Noting Trout's blank expression, he explained, "They are bad men who steal antiquities for sale." "What's that got to do with my wife and the professor?" "The coals were warm, and near the river signs of many men. I also find these." He opened his palm to display three spent bullet cartridges. Trout put a shell to his nose. The bullet had been fired recently. Where did you find them? Trout's eyes followed the police officer's pointing finger, then looked back to where he had found the rucksacks, as if he could draw a line connecting the two points. That's when he noticed the strange carvings on the wall of the structure. He stepped closer and inspected the boats and other figures on the bared stone. His guess was that Gamay and the professor had lunch, then came back to these carvings. Gamay definitely would have been intrigued by the strange etchings, but something must have distracted them. He turned back to Morales. You think my wife and the professor ran into these chicleros? See, Morales said with a shrug. It is possible. Why else would they leave their sacks? I was thinking the same thing. Sergeant, would you please show me where you found these shells? Come this way, Morales said with a nod. Be careful where you walk. There are holes all over the field. They slowly made their way across the plain. There were far more of the mysterious mounds than Trout first assumed. If each one had a stone structure under it, this must have been a good-sized settlement at one time. Here, Morales said, and over there. Trout saw copper gleaming in the grass and picked up a couple more shells, a combination of pistol and rifle casings. The grass was trampled all around them. His big hand squeezed the hollow copper cylinders as if he would crush them. Now can I see the campfire and the river? They examined the campsite and found empty tequila bottles and many cigarette stubs. More shells were found in the woods. At the river's edge, Trout looked in vain for tracks indicating Gamay's running shoes, but the mud was too messed up. He saw marks indicating boats had been drawn up on shore, as well as more shell casings. This place must have resembled a shooting gallery. But Trout was hopeful. The casings indicated that someone with rifles and pistols had chased somebody to the river. That was the bad news. The fact that guns were still blazing from the riverside indicated Gamay and the professor could have made their escape. Trout suggested that they get into the air and follow the river through the woods. Morales agreed. They walked briskly away from the river and were about halfway back to the chopper when they heard a disembodied groan. They froze, exchanging glances. Morales drew his pistol. They listened, hearing only the drone of insects. The groan repeated off to the right. With Morales covering him, Trout moved cautiously toward the apparent source. The sound seemed to be coming from practically underfoot. Trout looked down. Partially hidden by the long grass was a black hole. He knelt at the edge but couldn't see anything in the darkness. Feeling somewhat foolish at talking into the ground, he said, "Who's there?" Another groan, followed by a stream of Spanish in a weak voice. Morales, who had come over to kneel by Trout's side, listened a moment. "It's a man. He says he fell down the hole." "What's he doing way out here?" Morales relayed the question, then the answer. "He said he was out walking." "This is a pretty remote place to be taking a nature stroll," Trout said. "Let's get him out." Trout went back to the chopper and found a nylon rope in the emergency kit. He dropped a knotted loop into the hole. Then he, the pilot, and Morales hauled on their end of the rope. First the head, then the shoulders of a pitiful-looking creature appeared in the opening. The man's scraggly beard and long, greasy hair were covered with gray dust, and the whiteness of his ill-fitting clothes was a distant memory. He sat on the ground, alternately rubbing his arms, legs, and head. His nose was bruised. The police officer gave him a water bottle. He noisily gurgled the water, slopping half of it onto his chin. Refreshed by the water, the man showed yellow teeth in a cocky grin and tipped the canteen for another guzzle. His sleeve fell as he raised his arm. Trout kicked the canteen like a punter and sent it flying into the grass. His big hand shot out and gripped the man's hairy wrist. Even Morales was shocked by the unexpected move.
Senor Trout!
This is my wife's watch. Trout slid the expansion band swatch off.
You're sure?
I gave it to her. Anger flashed in the normally calm eyes. Ask him where he got it. Morales asked the question in Spanish and relayed the answer.
He says he bought it.
Trout was through playing games.
Tell him that if he doesn't talk, we'll throw him back in the hole and leave.
The grin vanished. The threat of being tossed back into the ground unleashed a torrent of Spanish. Morales listened, nodding.
He's crazy. Name is Ruiz. Keeps talking about the devil woman and the dwarf who made the earth swallow him.
Devil woman?
Si. He says she broke his nose.
What happened to this woman?
He doesn't know. He was down in the hole. He heard a lot of shooting.
Then quiet.
He says his friends abandoned him. I ask if these amigos are chicleros. He says no.
Morales grinned without mirth.
He's a stinking liar.
Tell him we are going to take him up in the helicopter and throw him out if he doesn't tell the truth. The man looked at the granite-hard expression on the face of the giant gringo and decided he wasn't joking.
No, he said. I talk.
You understand English?
Poco,
the man said, holding his thumb and finger slightly apart. In halting English, using Spanish when words escaped him, Ruiz admitted he was with a gang of chicleros who came here to steal antiquities. They found the woman and the little old man and locked them in the ground, where there was no way they could escape. But they burrowed out of the earth somehow and threw him into the hole. The other chicleros gave chase. They never came back to look for him. He didn't know what happened to the man and woman. Trout pondered the report briefly.
Okay, get him in the chopper.
Morales handcuffed the man gingerly, trying not to touch him, then used the toe of his shoe to persuade Ruiz to stand. They stuffed him into the rear bench seat, and Morales got in beside him. The man exuded a stench so vile the pilot complained. Morales laughed and said if it got too bad, they'd throw Ruiz over the side. Ruiz didn't think it was funny, and his eyes grew wide in fear as the helicopter lifted off the ground. He wouldn't be giving them any trouble. They circled the site a couple of times, then picked up the gleam of the river. It was barely visible through the trees, but with three sets of eyes they were able to trace its course. Trout couldn't wait to tell Gamay her new sobriquet, Devil Woman. He hoped that she was still alive to hear it.